Episode 186 of the TV Dudes, recorded June 6, 2018. People are terrible. Guys, people are terrible.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
But how does this relate to television, Randy?
Oh, right. So, yeah, this is not going to be our politics Patreon like you might think that title means. No, we're talking about a variety of shows in which people are pretty terrible. Those shows, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is back for the first half of its final season. The Netflix documentaries Evil Genius, Wild Wild Country, and Ugly Delicious. We're going to talk about the rich people in Succession. And we're going to talk about the robots murdering the vile humans in Westworld.
And we're also going to touch on the fact that we're, at least Randy and I, about to be at a festival full of people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. That doesn't bother me as much as it does Les.
Yeah, crowds. Yeah.
You're not a fan of that?
Not a big fan of other people.
I love TV Fest. I love the heat.
I love TV Fest. I just wish no one else would go.
You're also a veteran at this point, so I'm like, do you have your little spot you can sneak away to? Do you have the lay of the land yet?
I do now. It's called the Press Lounge, bitches.
Yeah. Oh. The Press Lounge at ATX Fest is
check
sweet.
Your privilege.
Yes. Yes.
Just a reminder that if you want to support the show, you can go to patreons.com/TVDudes. Give us $1 an episode. And in exchange for that, not only do you support, get the good, warm feeling of supporting us, which mm-hmm. is really worth $1 an episode regardless.
You ever had an orgasm? Feels just like
it
that.
It feels just like that.
Yeah, listen, there's not a lot of states where you can pay a dollar, get a warm feeling, and that be legal.
Just Nevada. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not even
Nevada,
legal in this
pretty
state.
Pretty much just Nevada.
That's why we're coming to you from a pirate ship off the coast of Texas.
That's part of the beauty of selling things online.
But beyond that, we also you get bonus content every week. So last mm-hmm. week we talked about Disney musicals.
Yeah, we might have even done a little singing.
There was a little singing.
Bonjour.
Did anybody like any songs from Mulan? I'll admit I didn't listen to it.
I have not ever seen Mulan, but I believe there were some callouts for that.
Yeah. I hated those songs. That was the first Disney movie where I watched it and one of the songs started and I went, "This is objectively bad."
Oh,
thank God for that
Mulan.
Chicken nugget.
Oh, I love the movie though. The movie's amazing, but like it was the first time where I went, "Stop doing songs."
All right, so we're going to jump over to the news.
Well, wait a second. Before we do that, we got to tell the people we're part of the...
you're right. I forgot. Grant's not here.
Yeah.
Also, I haven't introduced ourselves. This is terrible. I'm Randy. Yeah.
I'm Les.
And I'm Kyle.
And Grant isn't here. And
it's just willy-nilly.
It's just chaos. Grant
free for all
here.
Show. Kids are in
Cats
charge.
Cats and dogs and living together.
Usually when Grant's not here, he sends us a rundown. He gives us a rundown. I had to put the rundown together, and I forgot a key thing, which is that we are part... of a network. And also, we record in a studio. Now, we record in a studio in Austin, Texas. That studio is called Permanent Record Studios.
Permanent Record.
That was for you. Was it? Who wanted that? Alec Miracle?
Oh, my gosh.
Somebody wrote in last week about that. That was for you.
If it's not Alec.
But that is not the name of our network. Our network is called Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater.
And, you can go over to Electric Sweater. You can hear a lot of great podcasts. You can hear FemTV with our good friend Melissa, who's here for ATX Fest.
Indeed.
We're super excited.
Part of me is like, why didn't we just bring her on for 10 minutes? So this could be like a crossover
our
episode.
We set out in the lobby of our studio and basically did an episode that you guys didn't get to hear.
Yeah,
so.
Sorry about that.
We've already talked about all the shows we're going to talk about tonight, made our points.
Yeah, these shows are all rehashed.
Yeah, there was a pre-Mike sick burn that Kyle's never going to get to make again.
Oh, no.
No, I've got it written down here. I'm going to.
I'm never going to forget it.
Finger guns when you're supposed to make the burn, okay?
All right. Moving on from our network and our Patreon, we'll do the news. There's not a lot of news this week, but there's some interesting stuff. So you guys remember Joss Whedon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's that guy that can't figure out how to write a Batgirl story?
Yeah, that's the guy. There also was some accusations about him being kind of a philanderer.
Is that the charity one or is that the bad one?
That's the bad one.
All right.
But he also made some great TV, and it turns out he's producing a Freeform series called Pippa Smith, Grown Up Detective. Hmm. It's about a former kid detective who grows up but continues to solve mysteries. Okay.
So like a gender flipped adult Encyclopedia Brown.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Wasn't
this called Veronica Mars?
Yeah.
I was getting ready to say.
It sounds like a series that asks, what would happen if Teen Detective Nancy Drew grew up, which is actually totally what Veronica Mars it was.
I was like, this sounds like what would happen if Joss Whedon could go back 15 years in time and make a TV show.
Yeah.
So non-magical Buffy.
Yeah. Freeform has not had a hit for us yet, I don't think.
I have heard Cloak & Dagger is both very good and very slow.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Freeform, that's like all the... CW. I was about to say.
ABC
all the
Family.
CW
but
shows
yes,
are on Freeform, aren't
slightly,
they?
A little bit.
Yeah. It's like... is that where they go in syndication, or...?
Well, no, they've got... Freeform is actually ABC Family.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Blackish spinoff, Grown-ish, which is supposed to be good.
So they were Secret Life, American Teenager, Greek...
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And now it's Freeform, and they do Bold Type, and it's a... CW with a little more female empowerment slant, I feel like, is what they're trying to aim at. I forgot. They were joking about last year at ATX Fest. They had the people in charge of Freeform talking about the name change from ABC Family and rebranding and having to hire a company to do that and all this kind of shit. And they jokingly said that their rebranding pitch around The Office was like television for boss bitches or something like that.
Man,
and,
if that
and
was
it was it was one of like the whole room was like, we know you can't use that, but also awesome.
That's the slogan. That would get me to watch Freeform.
Yeah.
Call it BBTV, television for boss bitches.
Right.
In other news, Amazon has a award-winning novel, The Underground Railroad, is being adapted for television. And apparently Barry Jenkins, who is the Moonlight director, is going to write and he's going to write a lot of it. He's directing all 11 episodes.
Damn. Okay.
Which is pretty notable. So this is I think this is the magic. Yeah, this is the magic realism. So it's like an actual network of tracks and tunnels and secret underneath southern soil.
Wait.
Huh.
I'm sorry. Back that up.
Yep.
What?
Yeah. So the Underground Railroad is no mere metaphor. Engineers and conductors operating a network of tracks and tunnels constructed in secret beneath the very southern soil upon which they've been enslaved. Cora and Caesar's first stop is South Carolina, a city that initially seems like a haven, but the city's placid surface masks an insidious scheme designed for its black denizens. And even worse, Ridgeway, a relentless slave catcher of mythic origin, is close on their heels. So it is.
It's a podcast, and so nobody can see that my jaw fell open.
Yeah.
But straight up, like, we're getting like Sanctuary meets Slave Escape.
Yeah, this is an award winning novel.
I gotta read the fuck out of this.
Yeah.
What?
Wow.
I'm really curious. And,
I have many questions.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So.
Oh my God, Harriet Tubman with flu powder. It's just going to be fucking awesome.
So this is like a steampunk version of that time period?
I don't think it's steampunky. I think it's going to be more
magic-y. It's got trains in it.
Yeah. Everything with trains. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Sick burn.
Although, if they're wearing goggles.
It's not time yet.
Yeah. I'll reserve judgment to see if there's any goggles in there.
Top hats.
This is somewhat notable. Andrew Lincoln is reportedly exiting The Walking Dead after season 9, which you guys may remember. Andrew Lincoln is Rick Grimes, a.k.a. the lead of the show.
Yeah, and they've said that the comic will end when Rick Grimes
dies.
So
has he read his contract? Because you're on a weird show for this kind of stuff. What I'm going to love is in a few months when we figure out that they kill Rick and he just ambles along behind the main crew.
Carl!
Next two seasons. Carl! I can't shoot him.
I imagine that we all left Walking Dead a long time ago, right?
Oh yeah.
No, I'm still on. I'm the lone survivor.
Right. Yeah, well, you may stay longer than Andrew Lincoln.
Yeah, no. What they'll probably do is they'll just put him in the Iron Man suit. That way, he films his heads up display scenes, but then they CG him for the rest of it.
I do feel like The Walking Dead. If they add an Iron Man in season 10, that will definitely get some viewers. I think it's a good idea.
That'd be sick.
How about a steampunk Iron Man?
A crossover with the Invincible universe. There's probably a steampunk Iron Man in Invincible somewhere.
There almost certainly is. He probably had his heart punched out
in the same way that Supernatural does, like weird one-off episodes. I feel like Walking Dead ought to do one one-off episode that's just a bunch of previous characters from the show and where they are now.
Well, it's funny you
ambling,
say that.
Like wandering through the woods with the other zombies and shit.
Oh, you mean like the ones who are dead zombies?
Yes, like everyone who's been killed on the show and like where they are now.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard speculation that what they may end up doing is – because right now they're doing off-season from Walking Dead. They're doing Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And they've recently crossed the two over. What is his name? Not Lenny Bruce. Is it
Negan?
Lenny Bruce?
No.
Not Lenny Bruce.
gosh, Morgan's the character.
If Lenny Bruce was on,
it's like, man, I've been off Walking Dead a long time. Lenny Bruce is on this. It's like did Miss Maisel cross
over? The zombie corpse of Lenny Bruce. He makes cutting remarks and then eats brains.
I feel like the Morgan character, his name's something Bruce. Anyways,
I think you're right. Actually,
but no. So he's also on both shows right now.
Okay,
because the Fear of the Walking Dead was like a prequel,
right?
And there was a big chunk where he wasn't on the show, so they're saying he was over there.
Okay,
but they could quite easily just match these two shows up and kind of take like the people who are still on, because there's rumors of other people who want to leave.
Yeah,
and they've been doing this forever. It's kind of
a long time,
especially when your job is like, okay, we need you to cry really bad because your best friend's going to get eaten by a monster
again.
It's like, didn't we just do that Tuesday? It's like coverage.
Now's the time when we discuss Walking Dead, when I have to bring up what they could do to make me interested in the show again, which would be an Outlander crossover with Zombie the Bruce about the Scottish Revolution, Brainheart.
Mm-hmm. You know where Walking Dead never went, and why not? Like, dude, there's a guy with a tiger in there. Like, what if all of our theories of there being like Wakanda or some like technologically advanced society somewhere in the planet, like in the zombie apocalypse, they come out because they're the only ones who could. So one day just people in Iron Man suits show up and now they're in like this zombie free utopia with, you know, like future world flying cars.
I do love the idea of like there being three guys in like the International Space Station or three people in the International Space Station looking down as like the world literally burns and like one perfectly force field protected civilization. Pimple that they're like, the fuck is that?
Those guys would say, a sweet world, eh?
Yeah. And like Wakanda's looking up like, oh shit.
We forgot about the space station.
They did that on Last Man on Earth, actually.
We're kind of revealed, aren't we?
All right. Finally, Cobra Kai, which I don't know if we all enjoyed. I enjoyed
the crap out of Cobra Kai.
I'm going back to watch it. I missed it.
It's really good.
Oh, it's so fun.
So there is a spoiler for the end of Cobra Kai. Kyle,
bring it. I think I already had a spoiler.
All right. So Martin Cove, a.k.a. the sensei of Cobra Kai, shows up at the end to sort of retake the dojo.
Oh, shit. Yeah, he was like a great, like, 90s bad guy.
They intimate that they think he's dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And
but
then he shows
not.
Up in, like, the stinger, basically.
So he is.
Wait, is that him?
Yep.
Why is he not old as crap?
He
made
apparently
a deal
aged
with the
well.
Devil. Seriously.
Wow.
John Kreese looks like the same asshole he looked like when I was in grade school.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's just a little older and a little more craggy, which works for him.
I think he looked a little younger.
He has officially joined Cobra Kai Season 2 as a series regular, which is exciting.
Yeah, I'm just glad there's a Cobra Kai Season 2. I'm
Me
glad
too.
That did well. Mm-hmm. Like, it went from being a, no, they aren't really going to do that. That's a Funny or Die skit. To being like, okay, cool, they're going to do that.
Yep.
I wonder if that's going to be good.
I'm
shocked how good it was.
Here's what I wonder. So can we call them YouTube Red's House of Cards? They're kind of their ball to get this rolling, even though that reference
bit,
is weirdly dated now.
Yeah.
No, but I'm interested to see how Impulse does, and I know that they're excited about getting to come on the heels of Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
So here's why I bring that up, okay? This looks like something that was pitched places before YouTube Red.
Oh, yeah.
How many of those people are now going, oh, proof of concept? Yeah, bring in it. Well,
it's
you want some real money?
It's because they didn't get past the Funny or Die moment of like, haha, two of the bros in the office will love it.
Yeah, but
like when FX passed on Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad was such a perfect fit for their show, but they didn't know what it was.
Wow, it would have been a perfect fit for the channel.
And instead it made AMC. Yeah, I think that there's something to be said for somebody passing on a show that then goes on to become I'm wondering, like, Lock and Key got passed on by Hulu, and now Netflix is going to do it, and I bet it's going to become a huge thing.
Well, my question is, does Cobra Kai stay on YouTube Red, or does somebody else come in and buy it? Or if it's like a 2-3 season deal, you know, does it get their time here, but do we eventually see this on a network?
I don't think so. I think instead this is more likely to make YouTube Red something people will actually spend money on.
I would like to see that. I think that's where I'm rooting. That's my team.
I am team make me buy less networks. So I like your idea of it going to another network, but I think probably instead YouTube Red is going to get more stuff and there'll be more stuff for us to watch, which, you know, keeps us in the TV dudes business, which is great.
Yeah. They're never going to quit making TV, and we're never going to quit making TV podcasts. We'll be right back.
All right, we're going to start off with the first scripted show that we're talking about this week, which is Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which comes back with season 4, 6 episodes of what is its final season. I don't know when the rest of the season's dropping. I forgot it was half because I got to like the 6th part and I was really getting into it.
I did the exact same. I forgot it was a half. I'm glad that I had heard that before so that I wasn't just like, son of a bitch, Netflix. Really? This is the thing you shorten? The thing I had no problem running long, but instead we're going to get 8 episodes of everything.
Well, I'm not going to lie. Last season, I was a little lukewarm on it. And when I finally got around to it, season 2 didn't leave me the same way season 1 did, where I just like could not wait to get back. And yeah, season 3 was a little lukewarm. I came to this. Obviously, you know, we're going to watch it for the show. But man, I was blown away. It felt like 30 Rock at its height.
Little similar to Arrested Development and some other comedies I like. I adore Kimmy Schmidt, but I have to be in the, like, I get in the vein. It's perfect for binge watching because it very much gets me into its world and the way that it talks and its jokes and vibe.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
And then I just barrel through it. And so I've had, as much as I love the first season, I've had some issues, not actually with the content of season 2 or 3, but getting myself to like sit down and get back in that mode.
You're like, I don't really want to watch this right now.
Or can I commit to watching 2 of these in a row so that I'll get back into it?
Right. Yeah.
And so I sat down and just fucking fell into this one. And of course it's the half season. So to me that seemed like a genius move because I came away from it wanting so much more and was like, oh, okay, drop the other season now.
Also, I think that they did the story arcs they had really were really good. I mean, Kimmy's story about like working at the startup and the convention that
her horrible HR
blunder, which makes perfect sense. They found a story for not Lillian. Jacqueline.
Yes.
Found a story for Jacqueline. Where I don't want to punch her in the face the whole time.
I like her whole white agency.
Yeah.
She was a little jarring when the show first started, and it's like, I like that you're here. I just don't buy why you're here.
Season 2, it took them a minute to establish why she was still on the show for me.
Yeah.
Oh, I actually thought, was that when she was blonde hair and you meet her folks and stuff?
Yeah, it was like they had to find her backstory a little bit.
Yeah.
Because she was divorced and she wasn't really Kimmy's boss anymore, but she was still on the show.
That was so bananas, though. I actually found that a little more interesting than when she was just the boss.
But I like her here trying, because pairing her with Titus more directly, the two of them, their narcissism plays
beautifully against
each other.
They were the best thing that worked last season for me, too. Every time that they pair Jacqueline and Titus has been great since Pinot Noir.
Oh, my God, yes. And then there's episode 3.
Yo, where my slizzards at?
Party Monster Scratching the Surface, which is just a dead-on parody of every Netflix true crime, but it is
making a murderer-ish type.
Turns out that Reverend Richard Wayne Gary Wayne is also a legendary wedding DJ, which we've known before. That was referenced.
He's the worst wedding DJ in the county.
But not according to Doug DJ Fingerblast, who thinks he's the best. He's his mentor. And so he gets all up and is like, what? He went to jail? And so we get the men's right version of what happened to the mole women. And it's glorious and so wrong.
It's like if Kimmy Schmidt was real, like what would the Trumpers have to say about it? And we get that this season on this show.
Man, it's so funny.
I almost wanted to call him Mike Moody, but that's not his name.
No.
What's his something Mooney? The guy who comes in as like the MAGA guy.
Oh, Fran Dodd? Yes, Dodd. Yes.
Bobby Moynihan.
Oh, yes.
That's right. Yep. I love him in this.
Yeah, he's great. He's such a scumbag, and yet you kind of feel sorry for him.
it's weird. Yeah, you do have a little bit of sympathy for him, even though...
The bit where he goes to the play, and his mom says, Mommy, shut up! I'm like, oh my God, you just told me so much about this character.
That was pretty great.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that play episode.
The play was great,
genius.
Yeah.
Like,
who is she? Where are you from? Yeah.
I loved it when that girl was like, I saw this coming.
Yeah. The hipster, turning the kids play into a hipster thing was really, really funny.
Did you recognize her? She was one of the principal cast on Girls.
That's where she's from. Okay. No, but that makes sense.
Never going to recognize anybody off Girls. I understand.
Not even Lena Dunham.
Yeah, I understand Kylo Ren was on it.
Yeah. This was a great 6 episode run. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that the show, it's a shame that this is like we're coming to the end because I feel like they're hitting their stride.
I really do. Like they're still, I still feel like they're going strong. We were talking about jokes per minute earlier, like just sheer volume of jokes. Yeah. Wet Hot American Summer is another show that I always feel like is up there in just terms of like you threw 100 jokes at me, 60 of them hit. Mm-hmm. That's not a great percentage, but I'm still laughing.
Yeah.
And I feel like Kimmy Schmidt, I used to think 30 Rock was a high joke pace, but no. Kimmy Schmidt is a joke a minute. I mean, like, just crazy number of things. Yeah, Titus says a bunch of crazy fucking phrases. Everybody's constantly saying something wrong or goofy or somebody tries to plug something in the wall of their apartment, which you'll remember from last season, is a tugboat. I mean, it's definitely not a tugboat. And the walls are definitely not made of newspaper. But somebody goes to plug something in, and Lillian offhand just nonchalantly says, "Oh, that's not going to work unless you have a Croatian maritime power converter." And moves on.
And okay, I missed that joke because I didn't catch
it. Every episode has like 500 of those.
There's a bunch of those, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And they also do the dialogue to where there's not a lot of wasted lines. Like if they're cracking a joke, it's also leading us into the next scene or like the next bit.
And Ellie Kemper is a... seriously, Diamond, where they found her.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm. No
she was
one,
great
they're
in the office,
very, she's, yeah, she was great in the office.
She's great in that sandpaper blowjob skit. Did you guys ever see that?
What?
No.
Oh my gosh. Her first like big claim to fame was this college humor skit that went viral where it's POV porn and it's her in this dude's crotch and it's like really hot and you're like, who's this girl with the freckles? Like she's and she's like, yeah, you want me to do it? And he's like, yeah. And she goes, let me get ready. And she starts putting a paper towel on her tongue and he's like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm getting it so dry for you. It's going to be like a desert. I'm going to make it so dry. She goes,
God.
You want me to do that thing? You know, the thing you like that. And she starts like hitting it and she's like, yeah, I'm going to rip it apart. And I'm going to do it. And he's like, no, I'm good. And she's like, come on, baby, you know you want it.
Oh my God, I got to find this.
Oh, yeah, I got to find that.
It's for sure. If you look this up, it's the, I think just sandpaper blowjob.
When Kimmy Schmidt first
or?
Came out, I barely remembered from The Office because it's later seasons of The Office.
Yeah.
Like I had faded off on the show by then. When Kimmy Schmidt came out, I remember sitting there and thinking, like, where the fuck did they find this actress?
Yeah. I remember
very
from
few
the,
people could play this in a way that I don't want to kill this character.
I remember from The Office, and the reason I was so excited about Kimmy Schmidt, beyond the fact that it was Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, was I loved her on The Office. And when they described the character she was playing, I'm like, yeah, I can see that.
Sometimes they find a character that really hits a comedian's sweet spot of mm-hmm. what
Ellie Kemper
shtick
was
is.
Born to play Kimmy Schmidt. Or more to the point, Kimmy Schmidt was born
was,
to have
no
Ellie
one else
Kemper
could
play
be her but Ellie Kemper. It's like how was it Mitch Hedberg that they tried for years to find him a sitcom vehicle and like just nobody ever wrote a character that got his shtick down?
Yeah.
I feel like the opposite thing is that like this is so in her wheelhouse that no one else could do it.
I feel like the only thing that I would say is kind of wrong with the show is that it didn't land somewhere where it was released weekly, because you look at the introduction to the show where they kind of set up the whole thing, okay, she's a bunker girl and this, like, week to week anybody could jump in, even if you're in the middle of like, you know, maritime law or like any of these like you know, repeating jokes, like you can kind of get in and you're like, oh, I know who this character is and I know how the story like and kind of follow along.
As much as I love binging it because it is such of it like its own world and own voice, you're right, this is classic sitcom fodder.
Yeah,
this is exactly what should go week to week. This is the kind of shit NBC should be making.
Well, didn't NBC pass on it?
I think
NBC passed on the show, which as it turns out, if Netflix can't make it work, I mean, they worked for four seasons but they didn't continue on with it, which is what that's a failed show for Netflix if it only goes four seasons.
Well,
but if Netflix can't make it, NBC might be right, it doesn't have a mass appeal, but that's a shame because this is what sitcom should
be. Then people don't know what's funny.
You know, here's the last word on the whole it being canceled. I feel like shows like this are never really canceled.
Yeah.
You know, like
they're on
you
pause
get
until they pay the
like,
cast enough to come back.
Yeah, enough people to come and catch up on it and be like, oh shit, you need to make some more of this show. Yeah. And then, you know, people start talking.
We
and
do live in that
happen.
World. By the way, one last thing before we leave Kimmy Schmidt. I never skip the credits.
Oh, never. That's how I heard the Spider-Man song from one of the first seasons, Too Many Spider-Men.
Shit.
The credits always have fucked up songs.
Not just the uncredit, the opening credits.
Oh, the opening credits?
The Unbreakable mix. I love it every time. I never get tired of it.
Oh,
and yeah, the end
good.
Credits are always great because there's
the
always
full love. Version of that song is worth checking out on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Is this the first time we've seen the guy from the opening credits in an episode?
No, he was in the first episode. I don't think we've seen him since then. So it was cool that they went back. Yeah.
Yeah. The first episode, I think, is the only time that you see him because he's talking about the sunglasses being unbreakable that he found. Not the women. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Let's turn our attention to Netflix and some of the documentary series. They do a lot of these, by the way.
Yes.
But sometimes they get like, sometimes they'll get picked up and people will notice them. Like Making a Murderer got a big, big splash. But there are dozens or more of these shows.
Now, both these that we watched, Wild Wild Country and which I always feel like something out of like the movie Clue is a Wild Wild Country. Like Madeline Kahn or something.
See, I think of the Will Smith song. So.
Yeah. So
Welcome
yeah.
to the Wild.
That one and Evil Genius, not Making a Murder, are both Duplass Brothers productions, right?
Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes
sense. Yeah, which is interesting because I found the two of them to be really different for being the same genre of television.
So talk about Wild Wild Country because I didn't get a chance to watch this and I've been curious about it.
Do you know the story about this at all?
No, it's been told to me and I've forgotten it.
All right.
All right. Les, you set it up.
So there's a church cult. There's
Wait a second. Jonestown?
Yeah, I know Jonestown.
Kool-Aid. Okay, that's Wild Wild Country.
Flavor Aid.
Flavor Aid, right. This is like the Bogwan,
we're not getting paid.
No.
That's like the Bogwan of this. It's like a...
So there's... Wild Wild Country was a tough documentary for me because... On the one hand, there's really nothing wrong with this cult. Like, I'm using the word cult simply because they aren't a Protestant denomination. Like, they're a church that is not of sufficient size to earn that title. Mm-hmm. I guess basically, because they're not doing anything. They have a commune. They have a lovely philosophy. They wear really ugly clothes, but who gives a fuck? These people seem to really need it. There's really nothing they're doing wrong for most of the first. Few episodes of this.
Okay.
They do all the right things that you ought to do that I can see how it annoys this cult, this church, this group, decides that they need a place to go enact their township, their new world, right?
Okay.
So they legitimately buy a fuckload of land in a very, very rural area. There is an actual town, but that town has no shit like 40 residents.
Okay.
Like, it's such a small town that it's like, stop saying you're an incorporated town. You 40 people aren't getting together and paying taxes for shit. Come on. You were 40.
They got everybody to be in this documentary who lives in the
town. Yes. No, like, you're 40 people every used person. To be in town, but like, it's tough because like, these people didn't give a fuck. This town's not functioning.
Yeah.
So like, I appreciate that they all get butthurt about all of these cultists moving here, but you didn't care about this town like, if you did, it would be not 40 people. Right.
Right.
Yeah. But they suddenly care a whole lot when their town doubles or triples or 1,000 people show up. And I mean, they start building a land development. Like these people start building a fucking city.
Huh. Yeah, like Disneyland.
This church shows up and they get it done. It is a holy shit moment of like, wow, no, you guys are making it work. Like, you're that cult that's not full of shit. Like, you guys really are making this place.
Say what you want about organized religion. Organized.
They get it. No, they're organized as fuck. And then they go the next step, right? So the town's mad. These people start running for local elections. So they start getting elected as cops. Okay. I mean, like, they start getting jobs as cops. They start getting elected as judges. Like, they start going through the right motions.
Right.
It brings them into conflict with this town who gets more and more like, we don't like these other people coming in. And I have – it's very fucking difficult. I hate organized religion, and it's very difficult to have sympathy for this cult at the same time and not be like, I don't care how nice this looks. You guys are still structured around one person. This is an Amway setup. You guys are ripe for getting fucked with. Sure enough, the second in command of the cult starts making – not bad decisions, but emotional, like, oh, you're going to be like that? Well, then fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts to bring them into contention with the town. And the frustrating part of the documentary is that the church cult weren't doing anything wrong, and then they overstepped grossly. The town has a legitimate complaint about their people coming in, but then they overstepped grossly.
Okay.
Both halves are not in the right here. The township are being fucking dicks.
Yeah.
And disingenuous in their reasoning, and they're just being like, man, I hate them motherfuckers. The church does actually commit the largest voter fraud and largest food poisoning in the United States.
Wow.
Wait, the Kool-Aid's technically a food poisoning?
Oh, no.
Sorry, Flavor Aid.
That was in the U.S. That was off in not Guam, wherever the fuck they were.
New Guinea?
I'm blanking on where Jonestown was. Papua New Guinea. I think it was
Papua New Guinea. I think so.
Anyway, but yeah, this is they caused a huge, I think, E. coli or salmonella. They food poisoned a huge number of people. And they
purposely?
Caused, yes,
okay.
trying to suppress voter turnout, I believe.
Oh, my God.
It was one of those where, like, you didn't need – you. I was on your side, damn it. Why did you like, you were in the right even though you were also dicks.
Yeah.
Good guys never win, though. So they were like, we got to get ours.
It was so – I found
it. Like all the others?
No, it's pretty long.
Yeah, it's way longer than Evil Genius.
So it's difficult because, like, it's long, and that moment.
And they don't get to the point real quick.
No.
Okay.
I had a hard time with the documentary structure of it because it goes on so long, and because I hit that point of, like, fuck both you groups at about episode 4.
Okay.
Like, at about episode 4, I was like, no, I don't like either one of you. I don't trust either side of this.
It's interesting because I only gave it 3 episodes. And in the 3rd episode, I remember thinking, like, if I hang out with these guys anymore, I'm not going to like them anymore. Like, we're cool now. Like, let's just because they have this. It's interesting the way that they meditate. It's like a it's like a 4-step process. But like one of the steps is just shaking around crazy. Then you scream and hit
it's
the person next
yoga,
to you.
Or it's similar to Kundalini yoga. It's like a very aggressive yelling. It's not what a lot of people think as yoga unless you've seen several branches of that practice. And then you go like, oh, yeah, there's some pretty intense fucking gurus. And yeah, it's some jumping, screaming. Seemed like a fair amount of sex. The people,
and they're all naked doing it.
Yeah, the people that they interview about this, like, you can see them, like, remember and touch that part of them that believed in this. And, like, you can see how good it was.
Man.
And like, knowing humans, like, you know that this shit's going wrong. And then you see them come into conflict at the town, and then you see everybody react emotionally. And the next thing you know, the cult's arming up and like, wait, I live in Texas. I know
that's,
how this goes.
That's never good. Yeah, that's like, never good.
Yeah, let me know how having the machine gun keeps you safe. Maybe Oregon runs different than Texas or Idaho or wherever the fuck they are. Are they? Is it Idaho?
I don't remember.
It is rural bumfuck nowhere.
I will say one thing about this show. They brought in like a world-class cinematographer to shoot these interviews of the townspeople.
Oh, it's... Yeah, so
it looks like a Yeti commercial, like the you know the coolers they have, like the really dramatic, like it's just a redneck, like I only need one damn cooler, like that's what every interview was like.
It is a beautiful and same with I felt like same with Evil Genius the bit I watched of it, and I watched less of it than Wild Wild Country, but they're very different. But the consistent thing I'm finding across every Duplass Brother project I've ever seen is a quality. Whether I've like Puffy Chair or Baghead or these documentaries, and they're all different things, different projects, but I will trust these guys on if they put their name on it, I'll give it a few minutes. Everything I've seen from the Duplass Brothers has been well made.
Well, and speaking of these two brothers of Duplass.
Yep. Yeah, let's talk about Evil Genius.
We got this other show that dropped too.
Evil Genius is 4 basically 1-hour episodes, right? Maybe a little over an hour in some of the case. That there was a story.
I've only seen the first.
There was a story about
easily the best episode.
Was it the 90s? When did that happen?
No, this is like late 2000s.
Okay,
early 2010s.
I remember this story. Oh, this was 2000.
I don't remember this from the news.
This was 2003.
Never mind.
I do remember this because I remember hearing the story. I didn't hear how it all played out, but I remember hearing some pizza delivery man went to a bank with a bomb strapped around his neck and claimed that it had been put there by bank robbers, and that if they didn't give him the money, that they were going to kill him.
But it gets so much more arcane from
because,
there.
It goes from there. And that is the first hour. You're like, okay.
And that's crazy. That's like some Saw shit.
That's
in
crazy.
Real
and then his head gets
blown
off.
The footage of him sitting there talking to the cops going, I'm not fucking faking. This is going to blow up.
And then they blow his head off. Like, it is not.
It's real.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, well, I guess.
And the most ludicrous, like, D&D club code of shit that they've got of clues.
Well, the thing is, like, the suspicion at the time, the last thing I remember hearing about this was people were suspecting, they're like, oh, well, it sounds like basically he screwed up. Like, this was him. He could put a bomb on his neck. He thought he could rob a bank. Didn't work out, and he killed himself. And
well, and let me tell you, there is a good reason why that needs to be the story.
Yeah.
Because if that's not the story, these cops let this guy get his head blown off while they sat there for hours.
Didn't believe him.
They set up a traffic block or like a roadblock so cars couldn't get in there.
But they didn't go in and do anything about it. Yeah.
The bomb team couldn't get in there because the traffic was backed up. Yeah. Like they couldn't even get people on site.
Even in just the bit I watched, it very much seems like the cops made the wrong call on believing this dude.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the thing is, it seems ridiculous that it's supervillain shit, that someone would put a bomb on somebody's neck and send them to rob a bank. And it turns out that's what fucking happened.
I mean, if there ever was a supervillain, like, I would totally buy that it's this woman.
Yeah. So they do this whole thing. There's this woman. What's her name? Marge. It's got a three
but
name.
I heard the quote in the first episode where she says, it's not like I'm some evil genius that strapped a bomb to somebody.
It's her. It's her, like, boyfriend. And they're both – I move in nerd circles. I know these kind of people. The people who definitely have some, like, something wrong with them. They are really smart. But they think they're smarter than they are, and they love telling
you. These are fucking supervillains.
They love
these people that monologue to you while they've got you tied to a shark.
They love telling you how smart they are. They love telling you that I would never do this. That's ridiculous. She rants and raves, and there was this is so laid out so perfectly because I was starting to believe, oh, maybe it was the dude because he seems like he knows some things, and maybe he did frame her. He called about the. There was a freezer that had a body in it that was her boyfriend, and you know maybe he did kill her, and maybe she because she's so believable as a sociopath is. You're like, well, shit, maybe she seems so convinced. Maybe she didn't do it.
And here is what part of the genius of this show. Okay,
the
so
evil genius of the show.
The evil genius of the show. These as they're making this show, they know how it plays off, and they choose how to tell us the story. So, for example, one of the key parts of the story early on, we're told that. The investigators, they see this van kind of approach one of the scenes early on, like in a place where, oh, that person had to have been involved. Mm-hmm. But they were in the woods. He was on the other side of a clearing. They never saw this van again.
Right.
The filmmakers show you one of the characters and you see this van in front of his house that meets their description. And then it's not until the next episode where our characters in the show actually discover this evidence.
Right.
But if you're paying attention, you get that. And it doesn't just happen once. There's a few other times where it's like, oh, I see what they did there. They, you know, gave us the clue before they told us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. They sort of encourage the viewer to kind of play along and to be making their guesses. And the thing that I was worried about, the thing that always happens, especially with this true crime, is that we were not going to know. Like, they didn't know what had happened, and so we were never going to know, like, which one was it? What happened? No, they lay it out at the end. Like, they actually lay out exactly what happened.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. So, you will leave this with a resolution, but here's what I feel about this show, and here's why shows like this – actually, I watched Wild Wild Country after this, and it didn't really catch me as much, but here's why I think shows like this are going to – they're not going to work every time, because – there's a point watching this where you realize all the information we're getting about it, all the testimony, come from all the people in this circle.
Yeah.
And they're all on drugs. They're all involved in prostitution.
That really happened in Wild Wild Country for me. Of like, but you all were in the cult.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So you're like, there's no reliable narrator here. So it's like, I don't even have a belief because everything that I believe, I've been told by these characters. So it's like, even the girl who kind of gives like the final testimony – like, her past is so, like...
Yeah, you don't know
who
you
sorted.
Believe. Yeah.
It's hard, but they do lay it out.
I definitely get what you're saying. I love unreliable narrators. Like, if there's one literary device that you can do that will almost always hook me, like putting slide guitar in a band or something, like, Sons of Bitches, I'll probably listen to part of that song. Unreliable narrators, like, realizing that, like... if there's a plot hole, it's because no character talking knows what's happening. Really.
Or is telling the truth.
Or is telling the truth. And like, I love that writer device. And so, for me, doing it like that will almost always work. But I realize that it does actually pigeonhole it into one specific thing.
Well, and two, there's a difference between that being done in fiction, which I agree with you 100%.
And that thing done in documentaries.
Yeah. In a documentary, it's like, oh, wait, so I'm not really – I'm kind of watching American Vandal at this point.
So you didn't really make a documentary.
But it's about something that really happened.
Yeah. So this isn't journalistic because you stayed inside the whole time.
Right.
Like, you never stepped out.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I was totally worth the time. One show that does have a reliable narrator is Ugly Delicious.
Yeah, reliable to a fault. This guy, there's a few times where he gets real.
It's like, well, we're not moving into Westworld. What?
So David Chang is a celebrity chef. He's done a variety of shows. Most known for a New York show called Momofuku, which is sort of a – it's a really good restaurant by all accounts. I've never been, of course. I've never been to New York. He's opening a restaurant in California. And as part of that, he's got a podcast – and he's got this show on Netflix called Ugly Delicious, where he and his associates pick a food and then explore the cultural, sociological, and culinary history of a specific food. So, for example, episode one is pizza. Episode two is tacos. Episode three is home cooking. There's eight episodes of this so far. And every episode, David Chang goes one place, sometimes with somebody else, and then some of his other people will go somewhere else, and they explore all these different restaurants and all these different versions of this food. So the pizza episode, which is the first one I saw, I actually haven't seen all of it. I saw most of it. They had a Domino's.
Yeah.
Goes with him, and they go around traveling, delivering pizzas in Connecticut, and the guy, the head of Domino's is trying to convince David Chang that Domino's is actually really good pizza.
I found that kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because – Not that I felt like he ever
had
a chance.
Not David. It's just the other guy who's traveling with him.
But I found it like – I feel like a lot of these celebrity chefs and a lot of these food show people, like they'd never talk about Domino's on a pizza episode.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's like that's everybody's touch point to pizza. If you don't reference it, if you don't start there, like how are you going to bring us in the world? And he does it a couple times in the taco episode. He goes to Taco Bell.
Yeah.
And then he goes to all these other fantastic taco shops.
Well, like in pizza, they went to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And in the taco episodes, Los Angeles and Mexico. They didn't do Texas, which I found interesting. I guess Mexico sort of represents the Tex-Mex tradition in a way. I mean, but that's a different tradition of taco.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, I think I found interesting about the taco episode is that David Chang says up front, I don't like tacos.
How do you not like – it's like saying I don't like sandwiches.
Because he's never had a decent taco. And so all his buddies, like his food critic buddy, Jonathan Gold, they're like because you've never had a good taco.
I mean, and I feel like that's like saying like I don't like television when like really you just don't like sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
yeah.
Like how do you – like taco's not not an ingredient. Like that's just a way to make a thing.
And
like that's like saying I don't like walls. Like no, you don't like that color
actually,
paint.
That's
kind of the that's what I thought was so interesting. Because David Chang's a professional chef. So for him to be like have a blind spot on food that way,
yeah, like I don't like soups. I don't care what it tastes like. If you make it a liquid in a bowl, I'm going
to
hate it.
It like, was fascinating to me. And his critic friend is like basically explaining to him is like tacos are. What is he compares them to dumplings, right?
Or
is
yes, else there?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, but, yeah, because they're like a dumpling or a sandwich or something.
And by the end of the episode, David Chang's turned around on it because they've gone to these great food. They've gone to these great taco trucks, and they've gone to Mexico, and he's realized that he was wrong. And I think that's really interesting that
that's
starts
great.
From a point of view of.
Well, and he does this in every episode, but very much so in the final episode, which is it just Italian American? Oh, it's stuffed.
It's stuffed. It's all stuffed pasta. Mm-hmm. So,
and the big argument here is him and his friend, who's like an Italian American chef.
Yeah.
They're like arguing over who invented pasta, and he's like, "My people invented pasta." He's like, "No, Italians invented pasta."
Yeah, because they're talking about how a dumpling is essentially just like a ravioli.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Ravioli is a dumpling, and vice versa. I didn't see the last episode yet. I'd heard that discussion.
It's a very good one.
There is my favorite is episode four, which is shrimp and crawfish, and they talk about Viet Cajun crawfish.
That was interesting.
I didn't know anything about. I have a friend who's Vietnamese, and she took us to a crawfish boil, but it's mostly a Cajun crawfish boil. But this blend of sort of Vietnamese crawfish and Cajun crawfish. Looked amazingly delicious and was also just the thing that I think that there's
and it's close by
this,
Houston road trip
is that Les, you're not a big foodie in general, like you have no interest
in
this kind of thing.
Fact, so I've not seen Ugly Delicious. I am very hit or miss on food shows. Food shows in general work for me. Any sufficient level of enthusiasm for shit or excitement about shit, it works for me. Like I love watching people geek out about stuff. I personally hate to cook.
Yeah.
I don't really care about food much. I'll eat pretty much anything because I don't give a shit.
Yeah. And I think...
And so a lot of times these just don't work for me. Like, I find myself enthralled. Even if the show's good, I'll find myself enthralled. But half the time I'm like, no, I know I don't actually want to eat that dish.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, this isn't Chopped. This isn't even what, like, Anthony Bourdain does.
Yeah.
I feel like because they're so focused
Anthony Bourdain would never go to a Taco Bell.
Yeah, they're so focused on the history and the culture of a food that I think it's not so much a food show as it is a cultural show.
Well,
and I have a feeling you might enjoy it.
So, I would probably dig that because, like, I watched somebody feed Phil
Yeah.
Which that dude's unbridled enthusiasm just makes that work for me. And mm-hmm. I've heard Ugly Delicious just for the sheer, like, what the fuck is that? Cool.
Well, and they argue about stuff. The barbecue episode is all about, they talk about Korean barbecue and American mm-hmm. barbecue and why Korean barbecue isn't considered real barbecue and that kind of thing. And they go to Franklin, right? They go somewhere in Austin.
Not Franklin. And actually, no, it's that woman who got, like, best Texas barbecue.
Oh,
it's
right,
that
right.
Older
That's
woman
right.
with the white
it's
hair.
It's not in Austin. It's in Texas,
Yeah, it's close by, though. You know, my favorite episode, or the episode where I was like, damn, this is really deep stuff, mm-hmm. was the fried chicken episode.
Yeah.
Because he really goes into just how, like, racism is, like, deep-seated in this food, this fried chicken.
Yeah.
And just kind of, like, when you look at the history, you're like, wow, fried chicken is really fucked up in that regard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and he asks these really provocative questions, and you can tell that he just doesn't give a shit sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, he,
yeah.
you know, he wants people to have the conversation, and he doesn't have a side, and he'll listen to anybody
you know,
who's got a better idea. But, you know, he'll be like, why does your food suck? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if it's awesome, he'll cry.
Yeah.
You know, which was kind of cool, too. But, yeah, in the Cajun episode, you know, he's in New Orleans, and he's talking to these, you know, these Vietnamese people, and he's like, so why – the guy's making pho in the back, or pho.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, he would never put that on the menu because, oh, it's New Orleans. You got to have a Cajun dish.
Yeah, he's trying to talk them into doing Cajun-Vietnamese fusion, and they're like, no, we don't do fusion.
Well, and the thing
they
probably –
we do only Cajun crawfish.
They probably know. They've probably seen their friends try it or other people try it, and it's like, we're, you know, doing a business.
As a person who lives in a town with, you know, like the – out of the last 50 restaurants that opened in Austin, 49 of them were Concept Plus Fusion.
Yeah.
Like Concept Plus Asian Fusion.
Yeah.
So like, oh, you were going to make what food? Well, the Shark Tank group will fund you if you add kimchi. and I love it, but at the same time, it's a running gag in the city for me now, and I can kind of appreciate the, like, yes, my family can make pho. No. I can, like, I don't have to blend it into everything I make.
Yeah.
I can also just learn to make a wedding cake and it not taste like a Vietnamese wedding cake.
Yeah.
True. He does get into the episode where he kind of shows how, like, these ingredients and, like, the Cajun way of cooking, like, so closely resembles, like, mm-hmm. this Vietnamese cooking.
Yeah.
Like, at one point, he's even like, it's the same thing. Why even call it two different things? They're doing the same thing.
I always felt that this was because of my thing of just not giving a fuck about cooking and food and stuff. But, like, I always kind of feel like a dick watching a lot of food shows after a little bit because of that, of, like...
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So is it a, I'm sorry, is your local cuisine a starch and a protein?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What's the starch in your country? Oh, wait, which one grew here? Did rice grow here or did a grain grow, did something else grow here?
That's why my favorite cooking show.
But all food's the same fucking food.
Is that one called The Taste where it's just a spoon and the chef can put anything in this spoon and the judge just puts the spoon in his mouth and takes a taste and that's it. Like there's no they do presentation, but I mean, it's just like, what does it taste like?
Yeah.
Cause I mean, there's a lot of times on these cooking shows where like I watch somebody go to Bangkok and then go to Vietnam and then go to, Italy and then go to, and after a while I'm like, same deal. Like, so they're all dumplings. So everything's a dumpling.
Yeah. I think you might like this one because it's a different approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I love cooking shows, but this is a different approach.
Yeah, every episode he does scripted content that he weaves in and out of his narrative. I think the writing on this is really good. I love just listening to his insights, like the way he does like voiceover. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
All right. Moving on back to scripted content.
Oh, gosh.
Where we live.
Ding, ding, ding.
The fight of the century.
HBO has a new show called Succession that is about a patriarch, an 80-year-old patriarch played by Brian Cox, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of like a Rupert Murdoch type.
Very Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
He's got a big empire. They don't exactly get into what it all is, right? Like, it's media, but it's like, it's more than that.
Very ambiguous.
Yeah.
And some light phone tapping, some.
Yeah. And his son, who's kind of an asshole, and
he's a rich prick.
Is this the Culkin?
No, this is the other son.
Not the good son.
He has been tapped as sort of the guy to take over, and it's this guy's 80th birthday. They bring all the kids together. It's like his that son, the shitty son played Big Hero and Culkin, the daughter. Is there another kid? Oh, there's a grandkid.
The oldest son from Ferris Bueller.
There's the oldest son from Ferris Bueller. There's Alan Ruck, who seems to have abandoned the whole thing.
Well, you can tell he's done this before. Yeah. Like he's not. I love that the oldest of the siblings is the one who's like, I don't even want to get involved. Like you guys have fun duking it out.
So
like,
rich white people battling over who gets to take unearned power.
Yes.
This is a new slant for drama that we've not seen before.
I know you guys can't see this, but he's being very condescending right now.
No, they can hear it. Les didn't watch this.
No, I didn't watch it. I saw the commercial for it, and a couple of things struck me. One, I hated The Big Short. I don't like the way Adam McKay directs non-comedy.
Yep.
I find the fake news documentary push-in camera effect, which he uses to drill in on scenes and like push in on emotion and stuff.
Yeah.
It really, really doesn't work for me in the language of non-documentary film.
Yeah.
It's like breaking the fourth wall. It makes it a documentary. And then if my brain can't fill in how the rest of that works, like suddenly we have a third person viewpoint. Like the cameraman's a real character. It makes the cameraman a character for me. When the camera pushes in like that, it feels like the cameraman made a choice, and that's not a conscious person in the room, and it fucks up my suspension of disbelief in the show.
So I wasn't excited about this for that reason. I didn't love.
Oh yeah, the separate thing was that it's the fucking news, and I don't need to keep watching.
I hated The Big Short. I'm tired of watching rich white people argue argue about their power. I've seen on the news every day. It's
enough. We did an episode about Dynasty where I made this exact same rant.
Yeah, I like Dynasty better than this, and but it's HBO. And so I was like, I'm going to watch it.
I love Brian Cox.
And I
frankly,
like
I love everybody in the Culkin family.
And
except his parents.
I watched this. Good call. I watched them being terrible. And I was at, the 45-minute mark, and I think I posted. I was like, unless there's a character that shows up with a chainsaw in the second episode and kills all of them, I'm not watching any more of the show. And then they get to the twist where Brian Cox.
Twist!
I don't want to spoil it. There's a twist at the end.
Is it really a twist? The show's called Succession.
See, Kyle, you could have just delivered it, but you didn't. You had to make an arch. See, that was the sick burn Kyle delivered before we started the podcast.
These guys are pandering.
I was trying to tee it up for him.
That was scripted content.
I was trying to tee it up for him, and he wouldn't take the bait.
It just sat on the t-ball stand for a minute.
Listeners, if you could have been here earlier, it landed so good earlier.
It was good. I was chastened. But he's right. I didn't – I guess because Brian Cox is the big I thought the twist was going to be that he didn't step down. And instead, it's like, oh, I guess he dies. Well, maybe not.
Based on the commercials, they very much set it up of like, it seems like a show where Brian Cox is like, hey, kids, I know I told you I was going to hand you the company, but I've decided instead I'm an immortal.
And he does that, and then it turns out maybe he's not.
Oh.
Although we don't know. He could survive and be in the next episode.
So here's the deal.
Is this just going to blur with Altered Carbon?
If we find out that this is a Westworld prequel, would that bring you back? Because then you got to see, like, you know, how Delos gets to there.
The trick to aiming on any show is to add sex robots.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I liked, because obviously I'm the lone non-disliker of The Big Short, and I gave this a fair shake. And yeah, it's bad people, but not bad people like Sex and the City bad people, you know? Although maybe you don't think the Sex and the City girls are bad people.
They are. They're bad people, although I would take them over the Succession people.
It's funny. I was just discussing somebody the other day how that show has not aged well.
Nope.
So these characters, there's not a good one among them. And, you know, through this first episode, we see them doing different, like, villainous things.
Yep.
And something I appreciated was it's not over the top. There's this, like, really sadistic and mean thing that Kieran Culkin's character does.
You didn't think that was over the top?
Child?
That was over the top.
Here's the thing, though. It was that thing where, like, it's so mean, everybody knows how fucked up it is, but it's not mean enough for somebody to go, stop. Like, stop right now. Like, no, and none of these people would come to this kid's defense. So, and
what I found interesting about this is the one of the scenes I actually liked. Because what is interesting is when they go to get the couple to sign an NDA.
Oh, yes.
And I'm like, why would they fucking sign that?
That's the same thing. I got up and was like, oh, how often do you think rich people do this?
Yeah. Well,
they just like are assholes, and then they get you to sign a piece of paper.
They didn't offer him money. I'm like, why would you fucking sign it?
They gave him the watch. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, so the whole thing, and spoilers for Succession, we're going to get into it, but the father, it's his 80th birthday, and looks like his son-in-law who, man, he just you can tell this guy's an ass kisser. Like, yeah, we get a little bit of it, but there's going to be a lot more. Brown just all over the nose. But he gives him this super expensive watch. The watch looks like it comes in a humidor.
Yeah.
And he's bragging about how it's the most accurate watch on the planet. And what's great is, what's the actor's name again who plays the
Brian Cox?
Yeah, Brian Cox. He never says thank you to anyone. No. Like, people are giving him gifts. And the thing is, you don't realize how hard that is to do until you see somebody do it. Every time that he doesn't say thank you, I'm just like waiting for it. And then they do the push in, and then it takes you out of it. So
if it were just directed normally, I would watch this in a heartbeat, even knowing that I'm not going to be into the show on plot, because I love Brian Cox. And I love Kieran Culkin. But I know the push is going to bother me, but I almost want to watch it just because Brian Cox is the fucking man.
And the thing is, I like Brian Cox. I loved Kieran Culkin. He was in Scott Pilgrim, right?
Yep.
I loved him in Scott Pilgrim. I love he played sort of a sociopath in that too, but it's a more interesting sociopath. Yeah. This guy, I hated him so much. And I think it's because we live in a world of Martin Shkreli and Donald Trump, and I just can't do it.
And this guy, he seems realistic. I bet this has happened. Somebody has done this to some kid before.
Donald Trump Jr. has absolutely done that.
Yeah, Randy, you and I talked about this online a little bit earlier this week about this show. That I've found myself lately with less and less appetite for these kind of dynasty type shows, which used to be a huge staple. I mean, like rich people doing crazy shit, like, is definitely a staple of television and an entertaining one. I have no appetite for it right now. Right now, I want to watch shows about how underdogs kill monarchs and get away with it.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I did the director's commentary on Get Out. Mm-hmm. And when you get – or no. I did the commentary on the deleted scenes because originally he had a different ending where the cops come get him and the hero loses.
Yeah.
But honestly, what I thought was going to happen when the TSA pulled up in Get Out.
Yeah, we all did. Yeah. That was what made the ending so brilliant.
And he's like, that's what the ending was supposed to be. But he's like, in this Trump era, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't work now because it's too real. Mm-hmm. You know, like before – you know, it made sense, but it's like now it's like the character needs a win.
And see, I think that's part of why I don't like – what I want with Succession is I know Adam McKay's viewpoint. He did a podcast where he talked about his politics a little bit. He did The Big Short. And his viewpoint is more of a centrist trying to – hey, the way to forward is to understand these people. I don't want to understand these people. I just want to hate them.
I get that criticism all the time because I definitely grew up in this like Midwestern family, like lots of Trump lovers over there. Yeah. Not the people who are coming to visit me this weekend.
Yeah, that's good.
But no. Like I've got the cousins, and you know, I've gotten to the arguments. And the thing is, I'm still going to see these people in the future.
Yeah.
You know, I can't just, you know, cut them out of my life. So I do find myself like trying to understand them.
Yeah.
You know, or trying to figure out something I can say to get them to just understand me.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the viewpoint. And I'm glad someone needs to do that. It just ain't me.
All my friends say that.
Yeah. I'm not giving my peak TV viewership time on this one.
Yeah, no. Well, and we'll see. You know, maybe it'll win a shitload of awards this year and season two will be coming around and you guys be like,
Will the chainsaw guy be in season 2?
It draws from the same emotional well that The News taps for me.
Yeah.
Like it this kind of drama right now hurts me in a way of like watching people be mean to each other in a way that mirrors the way The News hurts me right now.
Yeah.
And the combination of the two makes it so that this is not escapist entertainment for me.
Yeah.
Whereas 10-15 years ago, this was escapist entertainment for me. I could watch Dynasty and be like, oh yeah, that's crazy, freaking rich people. And now it touches that same sore spot that actual real news touches, and I don't need that fucking prodded.
This kind of reminded me of the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, where Tom Waits plays the devil, and then the devil's the coolest character. Like, this show, we haven't been introduced to a good guy yet, but the devil is the coolest character. You know, whether it's the dad or whether it's one of the kids, like whenever they're doing something shitty, that's when they're most interesting. And the episode ends with one of the guys, actually, to be honest, probably the least shitty out of all of them by the end of the episode, but ends with him getting told off by a business adversary, essentially like, you fucked up now, like, I gotcha.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't see this show going in any other direction than these people and their greed and kind of their, you know, like, just eating themselves apart.
Like a rich people narrative version of Jackass. Like, I hate these people, but this prank is going to hurt them, so I'll laugh.
Could be.
I had friends, when the Jackass movies first came out, I had friends who were like, oh, man, am I going to watch those? I fucking hate those guys. I'm like, but they all get hurt. Like, that's the whole point of it. Like, do you hate Johnny Knoxville? You want to get shot in the face? Watch him get shot in the face. I fucking hate him, too. Like, yeah, and so maybe this will work for me on that level of like, fuck all you people. Oh, you're going down? Cool.
All right. Let's move on to Westworld.
Dum,
dum, dum, dum.
Dum.
So this week's episode is called Les Ecorches, which means, according to Google Translate, the Ecorches. Thanks a fucking lot, Google Translate.
Thank you, Google.
This segment brought to you by Google Translate. So, don't use Google Translate.
This is by Siri.
This is episode 7, so we're getting into it. There was a lot of time jumping. This was a mindfuck episode, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we learned that the whole thing with the engineer and Bernard.
Well, wait, we got to pause. If you're not caught up, we're busting
in. There's no way
this
to not be spoiler about Westworld. I'm sorry. We're talking about Westworld. Catch up or don't.
Yeah, we're going to spoil things. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Also recently caught up on Legion, and I just want to say I understand that there's quite a bit of complaining about the fact that Westworld doesn't spoon feed you. Yeah. But, like, Westworld doesn't spoon feed the plot, and it's done out of order, and some of these things are to make it willfully more difficult to put together so that it's more entertaining for you because it's about entertaining you. How the fuck are people not putting bricks through their TVs over Legion?
Some people are.
Legion
people
is so goddamn weird, and I loved it, but I sat there going, fuck everybody giving Westworld shit. Fuck you.
Legion makes Westworld seem easy.
Legion makes Westworld seem like a straightforward, thought-out plot.
So maybe that's the trick, because I fucking loved Legion.
Dude.
And maybe that's why I love Westworld so much.
Because I just sat there. I was like, I love both these shows. But I was like, if people are butthurt about Westworld, they got to be putting bricks through their fucking
TVs. I understand. Because there were points in this episode when I was like, I just kind of let go and let the ride take me.
Yeah.
Usually I'm with it. This week I was like, I don't know what the timeline is anymore. But I didn't care because it'll all be revealed. I know it'll be revealed.
Well.
And so, but like.
Should we start theorizing what we think the timeline was?
Okay. So
four.
Do we want to theorize? There is no robot uprising.
You don't think?
The only sentient robot that actually made a decision that is not programmed by Ford is Maeve choosing to remake her own cornerstone by deciding her fake child is real.
Yeah.
Everything else is Ford's long game towards immortality. There is not an actual robot uprising. That is to distract from Ford's long game of keeping himself alive in the simulation, which I love the fact that the cradle is a Black Mirror style step out of time and train things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's basically.
So we're on the same page there.
So Ford's keeping himself alive in a way that Delos degraded because they kept putting Delos into the real world and it was like rejecting the Matrix.
They couldn't handle it there. Yeah.
But if you stay in the simulacrum world where they're rehearsing hosts, Ford can live forever.
Mm-hmm.
Or Ford can, it seems like, risk it riding piggyback on Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like Bernard can exist in the real world because
Bernard's technically a fake host.
Well, and I feel like
he's never
a
real brain.
Definitively, because there's been speculation, especially with the scenes with Delos, as to whether or not Arnold is Bernard, vice versa.
So whether Arnold was ever real,
but there was never.
Yeah. Or no, if Bernard is Arnold or has any of Arnold, and
they flat out said it. Like there are not actual. We didn't have time to get an actual mind out of Arnold. We couldn't actually scan his brain.
Yeah.
So
Bernard's a totally different character.
So Bernard is actually a next iteration, an A to B, if you will, of Arnold. And they built him off of Dolores' memories for fidelity.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that Ford staged that shooting with witnesses so that he seemed like he died.
Yeah.
Even to the Delos board.
And now he's just running Westworld from inside. Yeah.
So, and we found the degraded Delos body.
Yep.
That they found in the crate or still in his lab, still wandering around, cutting himself up and nuts.
Yep.
Wait, of Ford?
No, Delos, the original Delos.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
okay.
Like we found the one that like, maybe it'll be interesting to watch him degrade.
Mm-hmm.
That went on for a while. But a part of me wonders is what is in Dolores' paws. Actual brain, is that Ford sneaking out, or is that what from the corporation? Like, this immortality project is really the core of this whole thing.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. Yeah,
And I also love the idea that the Cradle is a massive supercomputer hive mind.
Yeah.
Because you know, I mean, similar to Silicon Valley or Halt and Catch Fire or anything else, you know they're selling that processor power.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had that bank of computers, of brains that you could task to problems, you know you would set them to this. I love the idea that I think Ford and Ford have been concurrently making the robots.
Yeah. What, you know what I loved this? I realized that I don't know who's going to live.
No.
Like, when Ed Harris starts getting shot, I'm like, are they just going to kill his character?
Ed Harris is, yeah.
I don't think he's dead.
Yeah.
No, but, like,
I can't believe that he lived at least to the end of this episode.
But it wouldn't shock me if he dies. Yeah. It wouldn't, at this point, I was like, fuck, they might throw him away. Yeah, they might actually do it.
They can kill somebody else.
They could kill him off.
Also, I love Dolores becoming like the Terminator, the scary Terminator. Her facing off with Tessa Thompson.
Yes.
And, like, just...
That was pretty gnarly scene.
So, and we got a hint of that thrilling me when she first met Maeve. When she first runs into, when she first runs into Maeve and says, I guess you can, you know, you're free to go along your way. But when they both realize that, like, oh, we both want the same thing in totally different ways.
Yeah, I also, I liked seeing sort of the robots outsmart the humans. Because they showed this tag team was like, oh, the real guys are here now. These guys know what the big guy with the handlebar mustache. Like, these guys know what they're doing. And then it turns out that, it turns out that rebooted Teddy is a tactical master and a fucking psychopath.
Oh, my God. And when that just walks up and shoots the motherfucker last episode.
Well, character shift.
When they're in the thing and they're doing that sweep, and you're like, oh, these guys are on it. And I'm like, oh,
nope.
Like, that's the tack team. And it turns out that the robots have replaced them and just comes and murders them all. I was like, oh, shit.
I would love if Teddy remains this, like, psychopathic bad guy.
I like him way better
and
like
And then
this.
Who's the baddie who got changed to good, who was essentially turned into Teddy? The dude who does the voice for Grand Theft Auto?
Oh, that Maeve made good? Like, that's in love with Maeve now?
Yeah. That guy.
That guy. And then he becomes, like, one of the heroes.
Well, and I love Maeve fully calling Dolores out of, like, oh, is that the bullshit you tell yourself for what you did to him?
Did to him, yeah.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
Of like, no. Because Maeve understand, like, Dolores is on a mission about, like, Dolores is on a ham-fisted written game about robots waking up.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and Maeve knows that they're playing a game.
Maeve woke up.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe. No, I don't believe. I speculate. All right. Dolores and Maeve are both trying to do the same thing, but they've been sent there by different people. If I would speculate further, I'd say I feel like Dolores is kind of Ford's way of like trying to, you know, unlock this consciousness, whatever. Mm-hmm. But Arnold, not Bernard, but Arnold knew that this was going on and set up his own thing with Maeve. And Maeve is kind of like his solution to this problem. And the reason that Maeve works is because Dolores, she just has this protocol to like fulfill these steps, but Maeve has this desire for her child. Yep. Something that I imagine Arnold probably had with his own children.
I feel like Maeve is a robot programmed to look like she's waking up all the time.
Huh.
Over and over again. Like Arnold was trying to get Dolores to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's part of Dolores' shtick.
Yeah.
Actually, so I have a theory about that, too.
And
I don't think Arnold's been working with Dolores at all. I think after last week's episode,
we think of as Arnold working with Dolores is Arnold working with Dolores.
Yeah, it's actually
a lot of it is Dolores working with Bernard.
Bernard.
So, but I still think that the core of Dolores at the start, because we do know that it was real Arnold that she shoots in the street in the training town before they bury it under the dirt for the first time.
Yeah.
Before the park opens. And I think that stuck with Dolores, that like, you're my robot, I'm seen if the robots are awake with. Maeve, I feel like, is the same base programming. That way, way, way back when Arnold was fucking with the robots and like, let's see if they wake up eventually. And I feel like Maeve is if you didn't corrupt that experiment by continually messing with Dolores and talking to her. See, if you just let that run, Maeve is the natural progression of starting that game back then and letting it go.
That could be. I do see a different variable
by moving her
with
own
Maeve
cornerstone.
being this child. Like, I feel like the main difference that kind of separates Dolores' mission from Maeve's mission, because they're both going through taking names.
Yeah.
But Maeve has this motherly instinct, this like desire to be with this child. And I feel like you know, you hear stories about, you know, human survival and, you know, people doing this in real life where it's like, you know, I had a loved one I had to get to. That's the only thing that kept me going.
Incredible Journey style, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, maybe she's going on an incredible journey in her mind.
Well, and so Dolores realizes that all of the memories are fake and says stuff like, the kin they gave us were just chains to hold us down.
Mm-hmm.
She's let it all go and she's decided to be her own person. And that leaves her with no cornerstone. Mm-hmm. Except to be her own person.
Yeah.
So she's becoming more of a kind of an empty monster.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't care about anything. Maeve, the beauty of Maeve's consciousness to me and why her and even the film, like the screenwriters have acknowledged that in the first season, the true moment of self-will is not Dolores shooting forward. It's Maeve getting back off the train. Mm-hmm. Because you can see on the tablet, if you pause it in season one, Maeve is programmed to infiltrate mainland. She is flat out programmed to.
Yeah.
And she sits on the train and thinks, they gave me a fake child that I know is fake, that I know is not related to me. That child is a fucking robot. I am a fucking robot. That was just a cast member I was playing a role with. I am actually encoded to leave and go infiltrate the mainland. That's my job. Mm-hmm. That should be the only thing she cares about. That should be your cornerstone. And she makes a conscious decision to go and care about the fake thing. It's like deciding to die for a friend of yours or something.
Or it's like caring about the robots when you're a human in this show.
Yes. That moment for Maeve, it made her I adore Thandie Newton, but like it made me love Maeve's, like it made her eclipse Dolores for me and who I was rooting for in season one, and then season two has just run that so far forward. We're like,
although I was enjoying,
so hurt when Maeve got hurt.
I was enjoying Dolores a lot this episode.
Oh, I love Dolores this season in general.
Yeah, the bloody revenge on the humans is kind of something I enjoyed seeing because people are terrible.
But I want Maeve to win. I want Maeve
to me too. Maeve's my girl. I like her.
Question.
Yeah.
I may be reading too much into this, or this may be a very deliberate thing. Have you guys noticed anything with the performances from the actress who plays Dolores and the actress who plays Maeve? I feel like I get a bit more of the robot in Dolores' performance. Like, she does more of the kind of like,
I agree. She plays her a little more robotic.
And
Maeve plays it very.
Well, remember,
human.
Dolores is a very old robot. She's one of the oldest robots in the park.
Ah, that could explain
it. She actually is supposed to have older technology.
And Maeve is. Their core personalities, like, they're still operating off of Maeve and Dolores.
Yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they haven't. I mean, as much as Dolores wants to act like she's giving it all up, she's still acting like Dolores.
Yeah.
She's still calling herself that.
Yeah.
Which is just a fucking fake story.
Yeah.
And Maeve is programmed, and she said this a couple of times, she's programmed to read human emotional response and fuck with it.
Yeah.
Like, she is a madam of a whorehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think Maeve constantly is smoother and more human and like, hey,
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Whereas Dolores' journey is taking her, like, she was already more stilted and Paul, we can't be.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. But her journey has also taken her to a place where, like, fuck all your human trappings. I'm a fucking robot. You're weak. I will move with precision in my eyes. Like, I feel like Dolores is embracing her lack of humanity.
Yeah.
And Maeve is – they're both running towards freedom. Dolores thinks freedom is burning away humanity and being free of the shackles of your bullshit fake human emotions. Maeve thinks choosing to care about it is the humanity or is the freedom.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway,
who
the show's
win?
Great. 3 episodes left of the season. Next episode seems to focus on the ghost truck.
Oh, I'm telling you straight out, there is not the show's about a robot uprising that didn't fucking happen. I'm telling you right now, the entirety of the plot of Westworld, the whole Ford, the robots have gotten free and all. No, when Ford's saying Ford's game, the entire, you think the robots woke up is a Westworld game.
Or it could be Ed Harris. This is his training game so that he doesn't go
the way
of Delos.
I don't think a single fucking robot. I would not be shocked if it turns out Maeve didn't wake up. No one woke up. This is all a cover.
Huh. Interesting.
But if anybody, I think maybe only Maeve woke up, and I think it's an unexpected thing. So in this most recent episode, there's a moment where Maeve is in a town and she starts just when William gets attacked. Ed Harris gets attacked.
Yeah.
That's not part of Ford's game.
Yeah.
So Ford has Ed Harris on a game, right? Yeah, Ford is running Ed Harris out of town. Ford had all the robots shoot themselves in the suicide circle.
Right.
Ford's fucking with him, right?
Yeah.
Maeve deciding to care about her child. Maeve deciding to go off track. Maeve deciding to walk through Shogun World and get all the way back to this fucking random place.
Yeah.
None of that is in Ford's game. Ford didn't expect her there. I don't think Ford knows that she can control robots like that.
Yeah.
I think her getting Ed Harris shot is the first thing that's happened to Ed Harris that Anthony Hopkins didn't do. I watched that happen and went, oh, shit. Anthony Hopkins living in on the train in the robot training world and now half in Bernard's brain as a ghost, he has this whole intricate plan. Maeve is the spanner in the works that is not part of his fucking game because he set Dolores on this path.
Yeah.
He wanted Dolores on the train. Everything Dolores is doing that's free as she thinks it is, that is all to serve making Anthony Hopkins immortal. Everything Dolores is doing is a long-term way to make Hopkins immortal, and I guarantee her ultimate goal will deprive Delos of immortality.
Yeah.
The corporation will lose the ability to do what Hopkins is about to do to himself.
Right.
And that's Dolores' end game, and she thinks it's freedom, and it's not. It's to serve Hopkins. Maeve, though, I'm telling you, Maeve is free.
All right, every week we put up a questions post, and you go to tvdudes.com on Facebook or facebook.com/tvdudes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Grant's not here. I don't know
Or you can go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, review.
You're off the reservation, Kyle.
Isn't that a.
You want to go on Tinder? You want to swipe right on TV Dudes?
Yeah, this is not Westworld. We're supposed to be linear.
Is this a different segment?
No, this is a different segment.
Oh, man.
All right.
This does not compute.
Beep. You go to facebook.com/tvdudes. Every week we post a questions post. You can ask us questions. We'll answer them. This week we've got a couple questions. Ross Brown wants to know, name a live-action show that would be better as a cartoon.
Ooh.
Someone in the Facebook comment suggested Scandal.
Yeah,
and I kind of fucking love that. I want the Teen Titans Go animators to do a Scandal show.
Ooh.
I would watch the shit out of that.
I was actually thinking some of the wackier, like, I love it live action, but something like 30 Rock or Kimmy Schmidt or one of those in as an animated series where they could really go crazy with it would also be interesting.
So I loved as bad as the animation is, it's Filmation, it's 50s, 60s, it's terrible animation. I loved the Star Trek animated series. They got to do the scripts that they just couldn't do in the 50s, but they got the entire 50s voice cast.
But it was also
those were good. Yeah.
It was also like, didn't they make Star, or was it the comics where they like, it was like Star Trek, but they hadn't seen Star Trek? No, that's not the good. That was the comic books that Gold Key made.
Oh,
They were like Star Trek, but they hadn't seen Star Trek.
Oh, wow.
Yet.
No. These are just straight up original series episodes.
Okay, yeah,
they're just animated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they can do a handful of things they couldn't do in the show.
Yeah.
So on that note, like, I would love Discovery as a cartoon.
Yeah, because animation lets you do budget stuff, right?
Like, yes. It lets you go crazy with the budgets, and it also lets me accept a certain amount of schlock that I won't accept from live action. There's a tolerance there that's a little bit smoothed over. Similarly, I would watch Doctor Who as animation a lot more than I would watch it live action.
There's a guy online who did a quick 30-second video of a Doctor Who opening sequence was animated.
Yes.
And he did a Buffy animated series opening.
Yes. Oh,
and
my
both
God.
Those
that
are
looks
fantastic.
So good.
And I'm like, yeah, I would watch either of those in a heartbeat. I think that that's one of the interesting things is the stuff that is genre, because you can do so much more in animation. Like you say, there's a threshold where you're willing to accept it.
Yeah.
But animation has a different threshold.
Like, I don't want to watch L.A. Law, the animated series.
I kind
of
do.
You know, I'm thinking of bad shows that, like, really bombed, and I'm like, would Powerless have done better if it would have been a cartoon?
Yes, Powerless. Yes. Would have been, Powers. Yeah.
Oh God, Powerless as Archer. Yeah. Archer powerless would work like a motherfucker. I would watch the shit out of an office.
Because then you could actually have the characters from Frisky the comics
Dingo.
In there.
It'd be basically it'd be Frisky Dingo. Yeah. Like you do an animated like behind the scenes. Damn it, that would work.
On a similar vein, I was thinking The Blacklist. The Blacklist basically wants to make James Spader a supervillain, but he can't actually be a supervillain. In animation, he can be a supervillain. He can have minions and robots and fucking power armor.
They should have done
the Monarch,
and help them catch worse supervillains.
They should have done the spinoff as an animated series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that or what's the other one? Blind Spot. These sort of – because you can do action and animation so well, like the notion of doing something that is such an action show – and doing it in animation where you can really do like crazy action sequences.
They just recently did the Supernatural Scooby-Doo episode, the Scooby Natural episode, and it's joyous. Like it is so fun. But it made me realize that Supernatural is basically a fucking cartoon anyway. And so like animated, when I started thinking about this question, I was like, no, I don't think it would actually add anything. I think it's just the same.
Yeah, it's just the same trip. Our good friend Jonathan Huffnagel says, good evening, TV dudes. Over the years, I have tuned into sites like Spill.com and its offspring to tell me what to watch. Not just the big movies, but plenty of indie movies, far before I would have ever known about them and may have even missed them if not for the heads up. Some of my favorite movies over the years fell into either the horror, coming of age, or sci-fi fantasy, with the odd action or foreign movie thrown in. Kings of Summer, The Way Way Back, Chef, John Dies at the End, Southbound, Trick or Treat, the list goes on. What are some of the best, some of your own favorites, and what are some special little gems that may have been forgotten or flew under the radar? Love to try out some of your group's favorites that I may have missed. Now, first of all, Jonathan, we're the TV dudes, not the movie dudes. So I should disqualify your question, but I will not because I'm a kind person and we have a lot of questions.
I have seen a movie.
Yeah?
I love it how you let the listeners talk about movies. Every time I try to bring it up, this is like no movie zone in here. They're staunch. He's not playing.
You know what, Kyle?
What?
I'm taking the brakes off. Let's talk movies. Talk your movie. Tell us your favorite obscure movies.
Oh my gosh. Oh no, I only get a couple. I'm gonna slip two in quick.
Okay.
First is In Bruges, Colin Farrell.
Love that one.
If you haven't seen that one.
Oh my god, he's got a knife. Good.
Fuck, I love that movie. By the way, here's the thing, it's a fucking bottle. Here's the thing I discovered. Peter Dinklage is not in Bruges.
No, he is not. Because
I see how you would assume it. I had to check myself a minute of like, are you sure?
Yep. I was so sure.
He ought to be, right?
And it's not like, because they're just both shorter characters.
No,
it's the character he plays.
Peter Dinklage, yeah.
Yeah, he plays Tyrion.
Especially his elf Peter Dinklage, the angry Peter Dinklage. Mm. Like, I swear to God, I thought that's who he was. I thought it was him playing against
Tells the Americans just to not go up those stairs.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen In Bruges, you should check that out.
A crime thriller, comedy.
It's
like a dark comedy.
Yeah.
But the other one is just dark. Hard Candy with Ellen Page.
That movie and Patrick Bland dude.
That's a great last name for him.
Is that David Slade directing that? Is that the first thing David Slade directed?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it is. I think it is. And
what is Patrick Bland dude's name from Conjuring?
And Watchmen.
And
tons of shit.
It is, in fact, David Slade. I believe it was his first movie. Yeah. Which means, of course, it looks pretty great. I've never seen it, but
no, it's intense. Essentially, it is the film starts out and this guy who you don't really, I mean, you kind of suspect that he's a child predator, but honestly, he's very attractive. He's not what you would think of as a child predator, but you know, he gets this young girl. I don't remember seeing Ellen Page in anything before this. This is before Juno, before a bunch of other things she's done.
Patrick Wilson,
yeah. So Patrick Wilson, he picks this girl up, takes her back to his awesome house, and she's very underage. And, if I remember correctly, he either is drugged or he wakes up to essentially the reverse scenario where he hasn't been the predator. She's been preying on him. And she's been hunting him.
It is exceptionally done. It is worth watching. Holy fuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a horror movie if you're a sexual predator. But it's still pretty awesome to watch.
It's very much a vengeance horror. Like,
yeah.
Because he makes a pretty plausible argument of like, I am not a good person, but I didn't do exactly what you think I did.
Yeah.
I just didn't stop what you think. Like,
right.
He's guilty. But there's an argument as to exactly what of and exactly to what degree and whether what she's doing fits.
Okay.
Well, and, you know, he invited her
and
to his place.
The movie gives you more than enough to... I felt okay with what happens to her.
I hope you haven't seen both these movies, because they're goodies to check out.
Hard Candy is well worth watching. Ellen Page owns
it. I want to throw out one that is called The Machine. Last I knew it was on Netflix.
Oh, is this with Carrie Lotz?
Katie Lotz. And it is it's kind of like Ex Machina. It's about them making a killer robot. It's about sort of the nature of artificial intelligence. It's a pretty solid action thriller, and Katie Lotz is great in it. I don't want to say too much about it, but yeah, it is if you liked Ex Machina, if you like Westworld, I think The Machine is worth your time.
These are kind of all over the place. I have a couple of movies that I recommend to everybody if I can ever get anybody to watch a random movie.
Mm-hmm.
Brain Donors.
Never seen it.
It is somewhere between homage and straight ripoff of Marx Brothers movies.
Okay.
But John Turturro is Groucho Marx. And that's
great
about
casting.
That's about it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Called Brain Donors. I adored it. There's a movie called Stiff Upper Lips. That is if you did a scary movie style send up of Merchant Ivory movies.
Okay.
Like the Howard's End type movies. If you did like a joke a minute send up of those, there's a movie called Stiff Upper Lips that I found fucking hysterical. So when you see memes go around of like, what movies do you quote even though you know no one will get the line? Stiff Upper Lips. I quote from that movie all the time, and no one will ever get it. But it is absolutely great. Like, it opens with a Chariot of Fire ripoff. Like, that's the kind of mock-up jokes it's doing. And then there's a movie called Bickford Schmeckler's Cool Ideas that has Patrick Fugit and Olivia Wilde.
So I have two things I want to mention. One
and Franz Kranz is in that. Yes.
Uh-huh. One is a super not obscure, but if you haven't seen it, Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin is an action comedy, 80s. It's one of my favorite movies.
You forced me, and it was worth it.
So good.
It's so good. So watch that. And then I want to give a shout out to Neil Marshall, who right now is like directing Westworld, Timeless. He had directed an episode of Hannibal, did some big episodes of Game of Thrones, including Blackwater. Before that, he made
Thor 2 Dark World.
I did not do Thor 2 Dark World.
Who was that?
Those guys directed Game of Thrones.
One of the other Game of Thrones guys, though. So he is attached to do a Hellboy movie.
Oh, fuck yeah, with David Harbour.
Yeah, but before that, he did a movie called Dog Soldiers. You guys know about
this? Yes! Soldiers is so good.
It's about Scottish soldiers versus werewolves.
Yes.
And it's fantastic. It's got Kelly MacDonald in it. Amazing. Then he did... There's no one called The Descent, which I have not seen, but is about sort of underground creatures.
The people that like that movie really like
that
movie.
The Descent's great. Yeah.
And then after that, he did a movie called Doomsday, which is about a plague in, is it Australia?
Yes. New Zealand or Australia?
Yeah, and they've walled off this whole section of civilization. And inside this civilization, it's basically Mad Max. There's guys with, you know, driving around in souped up cars, but they have to like send somebody in. Rhona Mitra goes in to looking very much like her, the character from the Underworld movies. What's her name? Kate Beckinsale. She's in full-on Kate Beckinsale mode in like her leather jumpsuit. Nice. And she has to go into this crazy Mad Max world to find the cure for this plague. It's like six genres mixed into one. It's crazy over the top. Totally worth watching. Okay, so that's a few movies for you guys. Back to TV. Because we're the TV dudes.
Put the training wheels back on.
That's right. Handcuffs back on, Kyle. Kyle Volte says, "Hey, TV dudes. When I was just a boy, it seemed like it was a golden age for dubious TV licensed memorabilia like board games and water pistols. What sort of 70s, 80s era licensed good would you like to see made of your favorite shows?"
I am a sucker for not board games of shows, because like Firefly has a couple of variant board games.
It does.
And they're great. I very much enjoy them. But those are actual legit like thought out games that invent mechanics to mimic the show it's on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about stuff that is so thinly skinned over an existing game that you're like, you sons of bitches, this was the flavor of the month. like if there were a Firefly Monopoly.
I was going to say, if they did an Arrested Development Monopoly, doesn't that seem perfect?
I love that shit.
That is a great show.
So
for that,
I would watch the crap out of all of that. Like if there was a This Is Us Monopoly where you had to like buy family members' love, I would play the fuck out of that.
This Is Us would be the the game of life. I think Arrested Development, if it's not Monopoly, it'd be Jenga.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, because you're building.
That'd be great. And there'd be all sorts of stunts where, like, you have to imitate a chicken.
Yeah.
There'd be, like, gag stunts with, like, a timer.
Oh, man, I had one earlier. Oh, yeah, I'd love an Arliss action figure from HBO's Arliss.
You and no one else.
Like, literally, if that was available right now, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Succession lawn darts. It's fun for the whole family and then just you.
And the gardener's kid target bullseye.
I feel like beyond board games, there's like – I'm trying to think of like – there were action figure lines. And they've gotten to a place where they make action figures. Like, I have.
Oh, dude, they make some fucked up good articulated action figures now.
I have Fantastic Mr. Fox action figures. Like,
oh, I love that.
There are a ton of great action figures. So I'm trying to think what TV show, like, I'm kind of surprised there aren't Westworld action figures. That would kind of make sense.
Yeah. Have they even done Funkos of those yet?
I don't think they have, although they could have. There's everything done in Funko.
I want to get one of the technicians.
Have they not partnered with the Japanese sex bot?
They may have. There's only being sold in Japan.
Right.
Yeah.
There's going to be an HBO Real World about like the failed Westworld crossover.
I want Silicon Valley to have like an app game where you try to build Pied Piper in a successful business.
Oh, that could be good. Yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, video games based off of 70s and 80s television properties.
Yeah.
I played there was a video game called Goonies 2. And for the Nintendo, and it bore, other than the characters, it bore, like, the Fratellis were villains, and, like, otherwise no resemblance, really, to the Goonies. It was just a really fun video game. And so I'm always a huge fan of just, like, random property reskinning. So, yeah, I'm definitely nice. Down for, like, just take a video game that's fun and put...
What if you did, like, a Red Dead Redemption-type budget for a video game, but it was just, like... the first season of Quantum Leap, where, like, your first person, Scott Bakula, like, leaping through level to level.
The same way that they do those, like, Midway or whatever, like, they'll re-release, like, 25 games on, like, one tiny little console.
Yeah, they're all, it's all the Quantum Leap. One
so
game.
It's just Quantum Leap, but, like, you play one level of each game. Like, you just keep leaping, and, like, at the start of every level, like, the character looks in a mirror, and, like, it's Mario, and he goes, oh, boy! And
then you, like, okay,
you play,
yeah.
Play through a level of Mario, better. And then like you jump into like Mega Man, like,
and then you're Qbert. Yeah.
Mm.
I can't get past this one, Ziggy. What am I supposed to do in this game?
You could pause it and like ask like hints from Ziggy.
He's another Qbert guy with a cigar, though,
right?
Because he would always be in a different outfit.
It's just I want an 8-bit Dean Stockwell that talks to me in swear icons. That's it.
We all want that.
I know.
All right, that will wrap it up for us this week. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Les.
Thank you, Randy.
And we hope you guys enjoyed this show. And until next time,
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.